Now on RTE Radio 1, time for us to catch up on stories making headlines around the world on this week's World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, why there are calls to close an unofficial border crossing between Canada and the United States, and the world's largest agriculture show concludes in Paris. But first we go to Nigeria. It is Africa's largest democracy and it has just elected a new president. Bolo Tinubu of the ruling party received 37% of the vote, but his electoral rivals have vowed to challenge the result, claiming the vote was invalid, null and void, and of no effect whatsoever. The latest twist in the saga came on Friday when six Nigerian states, which had asked the Supreme Court to void the result of the presidential election, withdrew their petition. From Abuja, Nigeria, Polum David reports.
Nigeria now has a new president-elect, Bola Ahmed Tinubu, of the All Progressives Congress APC. The country's Electoral Commission, INEC, announced this week that he won the elections, which were held on Saturday, 25th February, with over 8 million votes in a country with a population of over 200 million. Analysts said the voter turnout in this election, according to INEC data, is the worst since democracy came to Nigeria in 1960. The low turnout was a surprise because prior to the elections, lots of people were enthusiastic and excited to vote. Many first-time voters picked up interest in the elections because of 61-year-old Peter Obi of the Labour Party, who they believed was a strong third force, and youths queued behind him gave him much-needed love and support, and they had hoped that he would win the elections instead of Tinubu or 70-year-old Atiku Abubakar of the People's Democratic Party, PDP, who were strong contenders. While Tinubu got 8.6 million votes, Peter Obi got 6.1 million votes, and Atiku got 6.9 million votes. As collation of the results was still going on and it became obvious that Tinubu might win, opposition parties started calling for the cancellation of the results gathered so far, seeking that a fresh election be held. The opposition parties said the results were heavily doctored and manipulated. Viral images and videos on Twitter show the result sheets from polling units having lots of cancellation and alterations. These made people lose confidence in Mahmood Yakubu, the chairman of the electoral body INEC, and some even called for his resignation. But the Electoral Commission insisted that the results were free, fair and credible, and said aggrieved parties should approach the court with their evidence after the final result would have been announced. A joint observer mission of the International Republican Institute and National Democratic Institute said the election fell well short of Nigerian citizens' reasonable expectations. Irish MEP Barry Andrews, who is head of the European Union's observer team, said Nigeria's Electoral Commission lacked efficient planning and transparency during critical stages of the electoral process. Samson Itodo, the head of Yaga Africa, an election monitoring body, said violence, technical issues and logistics were serious concerns in the elections. Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo was also among those who have criticized the electoral process, also alleging that results had been doctored. But the Nigerian Minister of Information, Lai Mohammed, warned him not to damage the election result with his inciting, self-serving and provocative letter on the elections. Now, aggrieved parties are indeed heading to court. Peter Obi, who came third according to INEC, is insisting that he won and he will explore all legal and peaceful options to reclaim his mandate. Obi also said the election did not meet the minimum standard expected of a free, transparent, credible and fair election, and it will go down as one of the most controversial elections ever conducted in Nigeria. Meanwhile, six states have dragged the federal government before the Supreme Court over the conduct, collation and announcement of the election results, insisting that the pronouncement of Bola Ahmed Tinubu, the candidate of the APC, as the winner of the February 25th presidential election is void. If there is no contrary decision from the court, Tinubu will be sworn in on May 29th as successor to outgoing President Muhammadu Buhari, who has been in power since 2015. The mood in Nigeria since the announcement of the election winner has been that of indifference, People don't seem to care. They're not excited as they go about their daily business. Nigeria is battling with issues of insecurity coupled with economic and social issues. And the new president has to tackle all these issues to bring joy back to the faces of citizens of the giants of Africa. For World Report, this is Palum David in Abuja, Nigeria.
Next, we go to Canada, where there are growing calls from within Quebec and the House of Commons in Ottawa to close an unofficial border crossing between Canada and the United States. Over the past few years, tens of thousands of asylum seekers have come north from the northern New York state into Quebec. But the French-speaking province has complained that the influx of so many refugees has placed too much of a burden on its social services and community aid groups. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the answer might not be in closing the crossing, but in renegotiating an agreement with Washington on how asylum seekers are accepted.
Opposition lawmakers in Quebec and in Ottawa have become sharper recently in their criticisms of Roxham Road. Even the Premier of Quebec, François Legault, is speaking out. In a recent opinion editorial, Legault called on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to redirect asylum seekers to other provinces, saying it's time to do something about Roxham Road. Other political parties, including the separatist Parti Québécois, are saying the irregular border crossing has sparked a crisis because of the massive numbers of asylum seekers. During the pandemic, the numbers were reduced to about 3,000 to 4,000 refugees a year. Since Roxham reopened, 10 times that number are arriving. Last year, nearly 40,000 people made the trek from New York. That's placed an overwhelming burden on the social services in Quebec: food, shelter, clothing, and health care for so many people. The mayor of Montreal, where most refugees go, has added her voice to those demanding that something be done. She says asylum seekers are now adding to the homeless problem in her city. In Ottawa, the leader of the official opposition Conservative Party, Pierre Poilievre, is also demanding that Trudeau close Roxham Road, saying he did it before, during the COVID period, then decided to reopen it. Poilievre says that was a decision, not an accident. He adds that as a country, Canada can close that border crossing, also saying if we are a real country, we have borders. If this is a real prime minister, he is responsible for those borders. Trudeau calls that approach far too simplistic a solution. He says Canada has 6,000 kilometers worth of an undefended shared border with the U.S. Asylum seekers will find somewhere else to cross, possibly at greater personal expense and at greater personal risk. At least one family died crossing on foot into Manitoba during a recent midwinter. Other politicians, including Trudeau's Liberals, say the real solution lies in renegotiating the Safe Third Country Agreement. That's where refugee claimants are required to ask for refugee protection in the first safe country they arrive in, be it Canada or the U.S. So if they then arrive at an official border crossing, a country can reject an asylum application if that person has already been granted protection by another country. The answer for most, then, is to use an irregular crossing such as Roxham Road. Some politicians say suspending or renegotiating the agreement is the only sustainable solution. Trudeau agrees, saying talks are ongoing with Washington on the issue, and he is being urged to raise the subject with President Joe Biden when they next meet. Other critics say it's not just about reaching a new deal with the U.S., but the focus should be on Ottawa being better able to control its own borders. The U.S., however, is dealing with its own immigration issues and may be passing some of its troubles north to Canada. Recently, Quebec's immigration minister, Christine Fréchette, says she was surprised to learn that the city of New York is providing free bus tickets to migrants that want to head north to claim asylum in Canada. New York City Mayor Eric Adams recently told Fox News that his administration helps in the so-called reticketing process for people who arrive in his city but want to go elsewhere. Adams says some want to go to Canada, and we are there for them as they continue to move on with their pursuit of this dream. He's faced with some U.S. governors who transport migrants straight from the southern border to New York City. The free tickets are to Plattsburgh, New York, which is then about a half-hour taxi or shuttle ride to Roxham Road. Federal data shows that Quebec, which has less than 25% of Canada's population, took in more than 59,000 of the country's more than 92,000 asylum claims last year. The Trudeau government has begun to address that, sending more of the refugees to other provinces, but even that is having consequences. For instance, hotels in Niagara Falls, Ontario, are filling up, but not with tourists. Since the summer, about 3,000 asylum seekers have ended up in the tourist hub. The mayor, Jim Diodati, says the federal government began by booking 87 motel and hotel rooms for the asylum seekers, and the numbers now are closer to 2,000 rooms. He says people in his community are willing to help, but he's concerned because May is the start of the tourist season, and he's hoping Ottawa has a plan moving forward. Diodati says we know how many rooms they need today, but we don't know where this is going to end. He also says many of the asylum seekers are staying in the downtown tourist hub. Many are also turning to organizations like the Salvation Army and community agencies for help. Meanwhile, for now, there appears to be no end in sight to the numbers of asylum seekers heading for Wroxham Road. Trudeau says closing the crossing won't stop them from trying to get into Canada. Other observers say it's really a question of the Americans and renegotiating the Safe Third Country Agreement. But the U.S. appears reluctant unless it gets something in return. But what that could be remains elusive. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to France, where the largest farm show in the world, the Salon de l'Agriculture, has been taking place this week. Over 1,000 exhibitors from 23 countries have been taking part. But as Mary Fitzgerald reports from Paris, the show also provides an opportunity for intense debate between farmers and environmentalists, politicians and voters over the future of French rural life.
It's a yearly event no French president can afford to miss. For 9 days each spring, the Salon de l'Agriculture brings town and country together in Paris for a celebration of rural France. French political leaders have been attending for decades. They pat prize cattle and confer with farmers in a bid to ensure their votes come election time. Organisers like to dub the sprawling event as the largest farm in France. It's where you can see elegant Parisians sizing up a parade of Charolais cows next to farmers, sometimes wearing black berets, toasting each other with champagne. Children in particular love the show, shrieking with delight when they see pigs and sheep huddled in their pens. More than 600,000 visitors have attended this year's event, which ends today. It's crowded and pungent, generating almost 300 tons of manure, but unrivaled when it comes to showcasing France's relationship with the land. Each year, a cow is selected to be what the organizers describe as the muse of the show. This year's star was a timid mahogany-colored breed with impressive horns named Ovalie. I had to elbow my way through the crowds to get a glimpse of her. She seemed unimpressed by admirers who chanted her name as if she were a celebrity. I was surprised to see that the American fast food chain McDonald's had a large pavilion in the main hall. Staff there told me France is one of the American chain's most profitable markets, and they were keen to demonstrate their relationship with French farmers who supply their outlets. They said McDonald's has had a presence at the show for over 20 years. Another highlight are the vast halls where France's regions showcase their finest food and wine. Visitors can lunch on delicacies including oysters from Brittany, sauerkraut from Alsace, and tapenade from Provence. Loudspeakers regularly remind the crowd to drink alcohol in moderation. In recent years, there have been complaints of too much drunkenness at the show. Media reports this year said residents of the surrounding neighborhood were fed up. At one stall offering cider from Normandy, some farmers quipped to me that they were drowning their sorrows. It's been a difficult year for French agriculture, with punishing droughts, inflation, and fallout from the war in Ukraine pressuring farmers. Many at the show told me they felt overwhelmed and worried for their future. Making the traditional presidential visit last weekend, Emmanuel Macron acknowledged the sector is hurting. He called for a water conservation plan and warned of the end of abundance, a line he has used repeatedly in recent months and not just when talking to farmers. Many at the show seemed unconvinced by the president. Some booed him. Later, he was accosted by an environmental activist. The annual show exposes several of the fault lines of France's agricultural sector, the tug between farmers and environmentalists, the growing disconnect between producers and consumers, and changes in French diets and lifestyles that challenge traditional farming. No one I spoke to expected next year to be any easier. The question is how much farmers may challenge Macron as a result. For World Report, this is Mary Fitzgerald in Paris.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.